How is the election of Donald Trump connected with the dramatic narrowing of the spectrum of debate around Russiagate and other foreign policy concerns? How have government and corporate forces manipulated the perspectives of journalists working in the mainstream media? Why are independent media outlets like Global Research, Consortium News, and RT being labeled and attacked as propaganda and fake news sites? What are some of the more prominent instances in recent years of mainstream media omission and distortion of reality? What are the challenges facing authentic journalists seeking to confront power in an era of universal disinformation? On this week's installment of the Global Research News Hour, media manipulation and the assault on independent media is in the spotlight. We'll hear from award-winning investigative journalist and Consortium News editor Robert Perry. We'll also get the perspective of popular independent investigative journalist and media personality Abby Martin. On this week's program, Fourth Estate in Peril and the Need for Alternative Voices, conversations with Robert Perry and Abby Martin. Bringing you the analysis beyond the media headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of December 8th, 2017. I'm series host and producer Michael Welch. The Global Research News Hour is a special radio collaboration between the Center for Research on Globalization and campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabe territory on the homeland of the Métis Nation. We seek to provide you with access to analysis of the major issues shaping our world today from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our program is available from the Center's website, globalresearch.ca. We can also be heard on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We'll begin our show with News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. In a politically motivated move, the repercussions of which will incite anger throughout the world, Donald Trump, the elected president of the United States, has made a dangerous decision so stupidly inept as to be unbelievable that could ignite the entire Middle East, including Turkey, Africa, and Europe. In a quid pro quo for favors rendered, this amateur president has made a decision that marks him out as the weakest incumbent of the White House in American history. Some would describe him as moronic. Whatever the correct description, he has laid the fire for a conflagration that could impact millions. The only ones to benefit, apart from the campaign donor, being the hard-right Likud party of Benjamin Netanyahu, who is presently under investigation for corruption regarding, inter alia, alleged kickbacks on multi-million dollar purchases of submarines from German Chancellor Angela Merkel. That comes from the article, Trump Gives Away Jerusalem to Settle $100 Million Campaign Debt by Hans Staling, posted December 6th. Yemen's Houthis fired a cruise missile toward a nuclear power plant under construction in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates on December 3rd. The cruise missile was identified as a Sumar missile, an Iranian-modified version of the Soviet-made KH-55 cruise missile. With an operational range of 2,500 kilometers, the KH-55s are equipped with guidance systems that allow them to maintain an altitude lower than 110 meters from the ground, thereby avoiding radar detection. Local Yemeni sources confirmed that the cruise missile did not hit the target, having crashed in the northern Yemeni province of Al-Jawf. The UAE stated that it possesses an air defense system capable of dealing with any threat of any kind, adding that the nuclear power plant in Abu Dhabi was well protected, state news agency WAM reported on its Twitter account. That comes from the article under the headline, Video, War in Yemen and Geopolitical Standoff in the Middle East, posted December 6th, originally appearing at South Front. For decades, most American Jews have claimed an Israel exemption. Resolutely progressive on domestic issues, they are hawks on their cherished cause. Racism they would vigorously oppose if applied in the United States is welcomed in Israel. Reports at the weekend suggested that Donald Trump is about to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, throwing a wrench in any peace plan. If true, the U.S. president will have decisively prioritized support for Israel and pro-Israel lobbies at home over justified outrage from Palestinians and the Arab world. But paradoxically, just as American Jews look close to winning the battle domestically on behalf of Israel, many feel more alienated from a Jewish state than ever before. That comes from the article, "The Row Over Jerusalem Gives American Jews a Tough Choice," by Jonathan Cook, posted December 5th. Turkey threatened to cut diplomatic ties with Israel should the country become the first to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. "Mr. Trump, Jerusalem is the red line of Muslims," Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan told a parliamentary meeting of his ruling AK party. Quote, "This can go as far as severing Turkey's ties with Israel. I am warning the United States not to take such a step which will deepen the problems in the region," unquote. Trump had been due to take a decision on the Holy City on Monday, but delayed it by several days following a string of public and private warnings from leaders around the globe. That comes from the article, "Havoc in Middle East Geopolitical Alliances Over U.S. Decision to Move U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Trump Calls Abbas Over Jerusalem as Turkey Threatens Break with Israel." Posted December 5th, originally appearing at Middle East Eye. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. Robert Perry is a longtime investigative journalist and the editor of ConsortiumNews.com, the first investigative news magazine based on the internet. He was one of the reporters who helped expose the Iran-Contra scandal for the Associated Press in the mid-1980s, and in tribute to his work over the years, he was honored with the Martha Gilhorn Prize for Journalism recently. He has written a number of stories critical of the mainstream media treatment of Russiagate, among other current stories crowding the airwaves and print media. He joins us now from his home in Arlington, I believe?
Yes, Arlington, Virginia, right.
Thank you very much for joining us, Robert Perry.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering if you could just comment on some of the key failings in journalistic practice that you've seen as we get into modern times.
Well, I arrived in Washington for the Associated Press in 1977, so it was, and I was working in a newspaper and for AP for a few years before that in New England. But when I came, the national press in Washington was still influenced by what had happened in the 70s, particularly the Watergate scandal and the stories about Vietnam, the Pentagon Papers. So there was a real skepticism that many mainstream journalists brought to what they were hearing from the U.S. government, and that was sort of a healthy thing. I mean, there are obviously cases where it went overboard, and other times when there wasn't enough skepticism. But there was more of that mix back then. As we got through the 80s, 1980s, the Reagan administration was very aggressive in trying to put this more independent press back in line. They spent a lot of time and effort, what they call perception management, and they realized that if they could control how the mainstream press was reporting stories, it would also help them control the American people, who had gotten also a bit out of control in the 1970s and the late 60s. So there was that sort of reality that was beginning to emerge, and as we get into the 90s, there was a veering away from any kind of serious journalism at all. Mostly was focused on more personality issues, Bill Clinton's sex life, and there was kind of a trivialization of the news. And then, of course, you get into the period of the 9/11 and the George W. Bush administration, where the press, mainstream press, simply failed to do its due diligence in terms of trying to check on what the claims were about the Iraq War. There was this more and more pressure to get in line to be quote patriotic, as if that was sort of the role of journalists to take the side of the U.S. government and not question the U.S. government too much. And we've now moved through this era where there is now this attitude of that the press should get on board and get rid of Donald Trump. I think the country was shocked in many cases that he won. I think maybe he was shocked that he won. And there was almost an embarrassment. There was a sense of humiliation about having this guy who was considered somewhat of a lowlife by many and not very smart and rather bigoted and simple-minded, and that he had risen to this pinnacle of American political power. One might say it says a lot about the dysfunction of the American political media system, but there was this attitude that we started seeing a year or so ago of trying to reverse it and looking for ways for the press to sort of join what was known as the resistance. And so the press has, the mainstream press anyway, has sort of jumped on board quite very both feet in this idea that they could use the issue of Russia and its purported influence on Trump as some way to both negate the humiliation of having Trump win. We could blame it on some foreigners, the Russians, and also maybe figure out a way to negate the election and impeach him or throw him out somehow. There's that sort of lingering hope as well, I suppose. Mm. But that, again, has taken the media in a direction beyond what I'd understood it to be, which was to give everyone a fair shake, try to be as objective as possible, not be part of some agenda, but rather try to look at the facts and present them to the American people as fairly and as honestly as you can. So there's now been this almost a break in how the media is functioning, where some of those old-fashioned principles have been jettisoned in this desire to both demonize Russia as we enter a sort of a new Cold War, a very dangerous new Cold War, and also use that as a way to discredit and destroy Trump if possible.
Today, it seems as if we have so many choices, including the internet, that there seems to have been a shrinking in terms of the areas of allowable investigation or news that, you know, as the New York Times masthead would say, is fit to print. Does that not seem a little bit contradictory?
Well, I think you have different forces at play. Obviously, you have economic forces, which tended to lead toward a greater consolidation of the news media as we knew it. So you had, in many cases, the number of family newspapers and various and somewhat alternative views, even if they weren't as ideological, perhaps, but they were more idiosyncratic. You had different families running different papers, and some had different points of view. That was pretty much wiped out as the corporatization of the press went forward. But you did have, on the other hand, you had some more more first cable outlets appearing, and then you also had the emergence of the internet. And as I was sort of finding it harder and harder to operate within the confines of the mainstream press in the 90s, that's when the internet sort of became available to us. There was the ability of the American people and the world public to access more and more diverse opinion, and now we're seeing a real pushback against that. And I think one of the darkest elements of the Russiagate brouhaha has been that a side of that has been to use that as an excuse to begin to silence the independence of the internet. Starting almost a year ago, when there was a front page story in the Washington Post based on an anonymous group called Prop or Not, and this group decided that they were going to pick 200 internet sites, including Consortium News, which they would just deem Russian propaganda. And I guess the reason we fell into that was that we had been skeptical about a number of claims or narratives coming out of the State Department. And that includes things like back in the 2000s of the Iraq War. We were skeptical of that. But we were also skeptical of some of the claims being made by Obama's State Department and how they were presenting the Syrian conflict, for instance, how they were presenting the Ukraine conflict. And what we were pushing for was a more thorough, objective, multi-sided view of those conflicts, not the Johnny one-note approach that the State Department was trying to take. But because of that, we were lumped in, these 200 sites that were deemed propaganda. The Washington Post runs this on the front page. The group is anonymous. They don't have to identify themselves as proper not group. And that was sort of a marker of where we were headed. And since then, there was more and more pressure on Google and Facebook to begin to de-rank, as they would put it, or isolate, marginalize internet sites, no matter how good they were, no matter how serious their journalism was. But if they were going in a different direction from what the New York Times was saying was true, or the Washington Post was saying was true, or groups like PolitiFact was saying is true, or then there were some internet sites that were just establishment favored, like Bellingcat, which always seems to endorse whatever the establishment point of view is. Those groups were considered serious. They were put into something called the First Draft Coalition, and their job was to, as become, to decide what's true and what isn't true, or what is propaganda and what isn't. And if they give you a thumbs down, you get dropped from Google search engine, basically. And it used to be that, like, Consortium News on stories we covered, we would be at the top of some of these items because we got a lot of reads, and maybe not as many as some of the big papers, but we got a lot. And so the searches would find us. The idea of this new approach is to make sure that only the mainstream publications get seen. So if you go on, for instance, today, if you went on Ukraine News, you would see, you know, the New York Times might have to say, or the Washington Post, or even the Daily Mail, or different publications, some of which are rather, you know, sloppy in their journalism themselves. But you will see fewer and fewer of these alternative voices. There's been a determination to try to silence that, to shut it down. In journalism, we used to pride ourselves in presenting both sides of the story. That was what I learned in journalism. You always want to present both sides of a story, maybe multiple sides of a story, because that way the American people are given the choices. They can decide if they want to agree with this or that. That's the idea of democracy. It's the idea of the Enlightenment. But now the major news organizations in the United States and these major technology companies have teamed up with a goal of preventing that. You're only supposed to hear what is approved for you to hear. You see, what you're getting is now a less of a menu of choices in terms of trying to understand the world. And that's what the internet had promised us, and there was the hope we had. And increasingly now, in the past year, under this umbrella of Russiagate, we are seeing a reversal of that.
There was a bill passed, signed by Obama before he left office, that allocated some $160 million to fighting Russian propaganda in the U.S. media. And so, I mean, some of the measures you've already mentioned, I imagine that's part of this. Are there other mechanisms that are being put in place that are continuing to restrict the spectrum of debate and discussion?
Well, sure. I mean, and you know, there was this $160 million package to fight propaganda, and a lot of that is now going to NGOs, to various academics who are now writing papers which have the predictable conclusion that all this is Russian propaganda. Anytime someone disagrees with the State Department, you're somehow a Russian propaganda agent. And so we're starting to see more and more of these studies, which, and then the New York Times and the Washington Post and others will then say there's a new study from some academic that no one's ever heard of, but whose account will be treated very seriously. And so there's that. But before that, you had USAID, which was funding a number of these programs around the world, journalism programs to support and to train and to equip people in these different countries to present stories that would be suitable to what the U.S. foreign policy interests were. That is, you would sort of have video cameras that would try to capture your opponents, whether a staged event or a real event, but put them in the worst possible light, and those things are distributed on YouTube and various other means, often calls into the New York Times, which are then treated very seriously because they're coming from these sort of approved sources of information. But again, it goes against this idea of getting a really diverse both sides of the story approach. We've seen also the National Endowment for Democracy, which came into play in 1983, which was one of Reagan's operations. And the goal was to start funding not just these political activist groups around the world, which would promote what the U.S. government wanted done in these countries, but you also had journalism groups being trained. And so you built up this infrastructure of funding and training, which is designed to undercut the sovereignty of some of these governments. Now, not to say all these governments are great, a lot of them aren't, but often the substitutes that the United States sort of prescribes for these countries end up being as bad or a lot worse. But that has been the approach that's been taken. And ultimately that does spill back into the United States, because many of these NGOs and other funded operations really operate out of Washington. They may have these satellite activities, but they are here. And so they begin to influence how the major news organizations are going to see things, because they give press conferences, they put out papers, and so forth. So suddenly you're starting to see much of this propaganda then pervade the American press as well. Mm-hmm. That becomes the problem as we go forward.
I wanted you to give a little bit more insight into the exercise of what you refer to as groupthink. I'm wondering if you could think of any examples, perhaps in more recent years, that really stand out for you as a textbook example of how groupthink and journalists are disciplined into maintaining their role as purveying the standard convenient U.S. imperial line.
Well, the classic case, obviously, is the Iraq War, when any journalist, and I would include Consortium News at the time, expressing skepticism about the WMD claims and the arguments for war, we were deemed Saddam apologists. That was sort of the smear that was thrown at us. We were doing our jobs, but we were mocked and not patriotic. So if you're in a mainstream news organization, you can't afford that. When I worked for AP and Newsweek and PBS back, years ago, it was that way too. And if you were in the 1980s and the Reagan people were trying to call you sort of a Moscow stooge if we sort of come back to that, I guess. But if you were being called somehow unpatriotic for not supporting or questioning the invasion of Grenada or something, you would have similar problems. But what's also happened is that since there are fewer and fewer well-paying jobs in journalism, that is, that it's kind of a winner-take-all situation. There are some very high-paying jobs, and then pretty much there aren't very many middle-class jobs left because so many papers have shut down or consolidated, and so your choices aren't very good if you're trying to do real journalism that goes against the grain. You will be attacked, and you will be called names, and your editors will hear that. And most editors are mostly conflict averse. They've got their own jobs to worry about. And what happened to Gary Webb, the tragedy of Gary Webb, when he revived a story that I had been part of starting back in the 80s, the Contra drug story, and he revived it a decade later. And because that story had been squashed by a combination of the Reagan administration, which didn't want that story to be accepted, and major news organizations back then, the New York Times, the Washington Post, for instance, that just didn't want to believe it, no matter how good the evidence was, that when Webb tried to revive it, he was then, in terms of professionally, crushed. He was crushed not by the CIA as much as by the New York Times and the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, et cetera. And they ultimately drove him to suicide. He lost his job and lost his life, and it became something. It's a horrible story, but it's one of... It shows how groupthink functions. And it didn't even matter at some point that the CIA, this Inspector General of the CIA, came out and admitted that, yes, the Contras were deeply involved in drug trafficking, and we knew it, and we covered up for it. That still didn't change the way the big papers were going to approach this, because they were determined to protect their own turf. They'd gotten it wrong, and they weren't going to admit otherwise. So we started seeing that kind of behavior. But we've seen it more recently, especially on things like Syria, where the mainstream press overwhelmingly took the side of the rebels, even though many of the rebels were involved with Al-Qaeda and then later the Islamic State. But still they were being portrayed as these nice guys against this evil government. So, we saw this in Ukraine, where it's all been presented as this one-sided story of the Russian aggression, when the whole issue, more interesting issue, really was how senior officials of the Obama administration, including Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State, and the U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt, how they essentially conspired to orchestrate a coup d'etat. There even was the release of their phone call in which they discussed who they were going to put as new leaders, and they talked about how to glue this thing, how to midwife this thing. So it didn't even matter how much evidence you had. The New York Times ignored that evidence when they did a piece a year or so afterwards saying there was no coup d'etat in Ukraine, that somehow the president, the elected president, Yanukovych, just sort of wandered away. But they ignored things like the phone call. They ignored the evidence of a coup to say there was no coup. So you started seeing this increasingly, I would say, this really very bad journalism. But it is journalism operating in a propagandistic frame.
You've made a very solid case for the importance of supporting independent media like Consortium News, like this radio program. You've got a fundraiser happening right now this month. So is there anything that you could say to listeners who would like to, who are maybe thinking about whether or not they should be donating to your site?
Well, sure. I mean, I think the hope for democracy, meaningful democracy, based on an informed electorate, an electorate that's respected in the sense that they can hear different points of view and their brains won't explode. Instead of being told, no, you just have to hear one side of a story because otherwise you're just too fragile. Our approach has been to challenge that notion. And we've done it without advertising. I think advertising on the internet has never been a particularly great business model. But secondly, you obviously compromise if you decide to go that way. There's no perfect way to raise money, I suppose, or because you need money to function. But I think the best way is to rely on our readers, people who have a diverse set of interests, who I hope will respect what we do, even if they may not want to hear something we're telling them. But we're giving them information that they really should need to know. But some people don't want to have their preconceptions challenged. I get that. But that's still the job of journalism, to give you information, whether you want it or don't want it. But if it's important and you should know it, we try to provide it and give context and the rest of it. So we do rely on, only three fundraisers a year because we don't like to bug our readers too much. And obviously the most important one is the end of year one, because that's when people do most of their donating because it's the end of the tax year and so forth. So we're hoping to people will go to consortiumnews.com and if they think we deserve their support, they'll give it.
Robert Perry, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much and good luck with your fundraiser.
Okay, thank you.
Award-winning investigative journalist Robert Perry is editor of Consortium News. You can find his articles and information about the fundraiser by visiting consortiumnews.com. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca. As with Consortium News, listener donations are vital for both Global Research and for the community radio station through which you are hearing this broadcast. On February 17, 2017, I had an opportunity to conduct a live interview with journalist and news personality Abby Martin as part of radio station CKUW's fundraising show. Since this is a repeat broadcast, listeners should not phone the number announced. They can, however, donate to the Global Research website by visiting globalresearch.ca and clicking Donate on the menu bar. If the show is being aired on a community radio station, please do consider donating to that station during the station's regular pledge drive. Now here is my conversation with Abby Martin.
Abby Martin is, of course, a very talented independent journalist. She's been, she's probably best known for her work with RT on Breaking the Set. Of course, she is now very active as the host and creator of the Empire Files for Telesur English. And, of course, she's also has her origins as a co-founder of Media Roots, which is, and also she's active with the she's on the board, I believe, of the Media Freedom Foundation, which finances Project Censored, funds for Project Censored. And, of course, we've had much of that information on the Global Research News Hour many times. Abby Martin, I want to thank you so much for your patience and for coming on the show and sharing this opportunity to talk about the importance of independent media.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Yeah. So why don't we just, I want to get into it a little bit more about your own history of involvement in media and recognizing the importance of having independent alternative voices amidst this sort of, fog of mainstream media narratives.
Sure. Back when I was in college and the Iraq War was kicking off, I was really, at the time, really focused on the Bush administration. I thought, how could this be happening? Obviously, Bush and Cheney are destroying the planet. They're taking us into these wars, and it's endless. And then something kind of flipped where I realized that the media was selling the war more than anything. And it was a bipartisan consensus among the foreign policy establishment. It didn't matter if they were Democrats or Republicans. They were selling the war, too. And when Nancy Pelosi said impeachment was off the table, I knew that there was something very, very wrong with the entire system. And what I realized is that, hey, if the media is complicit in this, we cannot rely on them anymore to give us the information to really combat the system and to challenge what is going on, challenge this oligarchic rule. So at that time, I just realized that I needed to start aggregating information that was being censored. At the same time, I kind of was awakened to Project Censored's work, really awakened to how consolidated the media machine really is and has been over the last 30 years, where today we have six corporations controlling 90% of everything that we see, hear, and read in this country. And it's gotten to the point of such extremes where that's pretty much why Trump won, because there's such a gross distrust with the mainstream media establishment that people actually have completely revolted against it because they all lined up, of course, behind Hillary Clinton. So, you know, over the last 10 years, I kind of took agency in my own hands and created a media outlet, Media Roots, and started just reporting on my own community and trying to tell those stories from the marginalized and oppressed that weren't being told. Mm-hmm. And to tie these things together into an entire system failure, diagnose what's really happening and connect the dots. And it just kind of, I haven't stopped since. I went to RT and because RT was really filling that vacuum that was missing from the corporate media, talking about inequality, talking about activist movements, covering the voices of radicals. And then from there, moving on to Empire Files, kind of a more long form documentary format.
Yeah.
And so that's where I am today.
Yeah, it sounds like your development is very much along the lines of my own. Like, I first got involved in this radio station, CKUW, largely for the same sorts of reasons. I mean, they're not these narratives about the Iraq War and about 9/11 and about all of the environmental crisis that just weren't getting registered anywhere else. And, like, even before I got involved with this specific radio station, I'd listened to all of the other stations and, you know, I wasn't getting that information. And here with CKW, it's volunteers are brought in. Citizen journalists can come in and get their information aired. And I think if our listeners appreciate that independent and alternative viewpoint, they should call 204-774-6877 right now. And, within the space of this hour, we're hoping to get more funds coming in to support what we do, that this unique little hub that we have here locally. Now, you know, Abby, you've heard this term fake news being bandied about, or, you know, it seems to me, I don't remember hearing that specific phrase being used before the last election. It seemed like it just popped out of nowhere. I'm wondering if you have any insights, because to be certain, I mean, just because something isn't mainstream media doesn't necessarily mean that it's true, you know. But at the same time, I think when you hear people like, you know, some of the major media and the president using this term fake news, they have an agenda other than trying to make sure the public has the information that they really need, right?
Absolutely. Fake news is a term that's been weaponized by the establishment in order to discredit actually non-corporate media. You know, you're talking about the need to support alternative non-corporate media. Absolutely, Michael. I mean, we are living in an abysmal climate of citizen journalism where we need people to support. You know, we're in a country where we love to laud journalists and watch movies and about how important journalists are. We don't like to fund them.
Yeah.
And so you have the entire media apparatus controlled by a neoliberal establishment that pushes this misinformation and distortion. But yeah, fake news is a term that was propagated by the Washington Post, and of course it was taken and run by a lot of corporate media entities to try to discredit Counterpunch, Truth Dig, very legitimate progressive news outlets that are doing the real work. Getting their hands dirty based on literally donations from citizen activists who want to see a people's media being represented. So it was a very, very crude and very, very disgusting effort, I think, to try to discredit people all across the spectrum who were not in this establishment realm, right? These two, mm-hmm. the mainstream publications read by the Beltway. It was completely insane. But really what it did is it totally flipped the term on its head. Because like I was saying before, Trump really won and rode this train of people's distrust in the mainstream media, use it to his advantage. And so, of course, this term ended up, you know, he ended up using it and weaponizing it. It has become completely weaponized, where now Trump can just call everything the mainstream media says fake news, where you see him in press conferences just saying, you're fake news, fake media. I mean, it is completely Orwellian and insane that we have the president of the United States calling every single journalist in the press corps fake news that isn't the Christian Broadcasting Network or InfoWars. I mean, and really when you're looking at what is fake news, you know, what is censorship? It's not necessarily the black hand of the state blacking out a story on behalf of the government. It could be distortion. It can be skewed analysis. It can be heavy bias, advertising, omissions, all of these things. You can call them fake news in a blanket term, but really they're huge pervasive problems that didn't start and end with when the establishment started calling things fake news. But I think it's really important for us to take a step back and not paint everything in the mainstream media as fake news. You know, I post stories all the time and people are like, oh, that's from CNN, that's fake news. No, we need to be media literate. Stop weaponizing these terms. Stop using these terms as some sort of impetus to crack down on the dissemination of information. Instead, we need to be media literate, take a step back and analyze the media spectrum with an open mind and a critical eye. And I think that that's really the solution to wade through the swamp with the Breitbart and InfoWars people in the ear of the president of the United States. It's our job and our responsibility to take back these narratives that have been hijacked and used against us.
Yeah, you've opened up quite a fairly explosive nugget of points there. I just wanted to maybe zone in. You were just talking about the success of Trump in the last election is largely an indictment of or a comment on the general public's lack of trust in mainstream media. But I think it's also important to point out the role mainstream media had in elevating Trump in the first place, right?
Totally. You had Les Moonves, the CEO of CBS, said Trump is horrible for this country, but he's damn good for CBS. And that's what it comes down to. He's a ratings machine. I've never seen someone actually thrive more on negative publicity than I have Trump. And you know, going back to the whole, when the system's against you, you must be anti-establishment, right? You're capturing that kind of anti-establishment populist fervor in the country. Absolutely. They were airing empty podiums. They were airing doorwells and stairways waiting for Trump to come out
for literally up to 30 minutes, Michael. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. My partner and I were just sitting there, mouths agape, wanting to see Bernie Sanders, wanting to see other people talking, wanting to see other stories covered. You know, there's many things happening in the world. But no, every time Trump was doing anything at all, these stage press conferences, they just had zoomed in their lenses, completely unedited, for hours sometimes. Just what is Trump going to say and how is he going to say it? Oh, let's just spend the next 6 hours analyzing every single thing that he says. I've never seen a more failed formula. And, you know, you would think that they would take a step back and say, maybe we should come across this in a different way. Maybe we should approach Trump in a different way than we did the campaign. No, you're just seeing them double down on the same strategy and doing more of the same. And
absolutely,
it's doing the same amount of damage and same amount of harm.
And it still continues. I mean, we had over the last week, the Prime Minister of Canada came down to Washington to speak with, to have some, I don't know, locker room talk with Donald Trump or whatever. And there was so much focus on this stupid handshake. Like, that's not, we don't, that's not the sort of thing we would focus on here in independent media. Certainly Global Research News Hour, it doesn't waste time with that kind of trivia. We're looking beyond, taking things to a deeper level, you know. And for example, we did a couple of stories recently looking at Trump and the deep state. And so we're asking these sorts of deep questions about who benefits and looking at that whole architecture of just how, who is being served by Trump, why he was allowed to get where he is, and the kinds of policies we can expect given the makeup of the cabinet, as they say, structure is strategy in slow motion. So if you appreciate, you listeners, if you've just joined us, the number to call is 204-774-6877, and show your support for independent analysis, rigorous analysis, and such as what we try to bring every week on Global Research News Hour. I'm joined by somebody who's been very much at the forefront of trying to dig deep and really expose the manipulation at work. Abby Martin, who's the host of Telesur's English's Empire Files. Now, Abby, you're probably familiar with the passage recently of the National Defense Authorization Act. Obama passed it in December, and it included in addition to the $600 billion going to the military, there's this, they call it the Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act. And that essentially is engaged in demonizing all of the dissident media. I mean, that's, essentially, let's be face it, that's what they're talking about. It's not just a matter of smearing them. I mean, there is actually legislation at work to act as a kind of a ministry of truth that is regulating what is and is not fake news. And so I'm just wondering what thoughts you have about that as, Global Research, RT, and, many of the other people that you know who have been doing this sort of dissident research are being targeted by this. So what are your thoughts about that whole Orwellian?
Well, it's incredible to see an actual Orwellian agency being created by, the so-called most liberal, transparent president we've ever had. It's quite astounding. The NDA was a complete disaster, and you see the seeds were sown back then. They knew that stations like Russia Today, they knew that things like, Telesur were threatening their mainstream narrative about what to do with the country, this neoliberal dogma. And so, of course, they've had their sights on RT for some time, but I think that it really hammered home when the DNI report came out, this long-awaited intelligence report from the intelligence community on behalf of 17 different agencies, right? In an era where these anonymous claims from these different intelligence agencies are taken dogmatically without any sort of questioning whatsoever, we have to take a step back and look at what are they really saying here? I think that they're trying to completely undermine Trump's presidency, which is very scary. The deep state is clearly trying to usurp him, which is scary because he was democratically elected. But on the other hand, I don't think that Trump is some sort of threat to the empire. I think that he is just representing a different sort of capitalist class, and that they don't want someone who can maybe galvanize the masses into the streets and put us on the verge of a civil war like Steve Bannon wants. So they wanted a more smooth transition. They wanted Hillary Clinton in there to carry out the empire's goals at home and abroad without really a peep from the populace. But as far as the NDAA, the DNA report, when it came out and basically blamed RT almost solely on Trump's victory, you would think that they would have pointed to different things among RT's programming and said, okay, you guys talked about Trump here, you talked about Trump here. Instead, they basically said RT's coverage of things like environmental injustice, Occupy Wall Street, alleged, quote, Wall Street greed. Those were the things, and of course, labeled me as part of this propaganda vector when the Kremlin decided to start subverting U.S. democracy.
I mean, even though you've been off the air for 2 years.
Yeah, they singled my show out, and they used it as part of their justification of why RT was really at fault for this. I mean, once again, it is so hyperbolic, and it's such an extreme deflection from accountability and responsibility on behalf of the establishment to look at them and say, well, why the hell did this happen? So I think that, yeah, I mean, we're going to see this more and more, Michael. I mean, the NDAA was setting the stage for the legislation that will come later. And you see the DNI report getting everyone hyped up in a fervor against RT. They're absolutely going to try to shut down Russia today, especially with this whole insane, frenzied hysteria about Putin and Trump. Yeah. And Russia usurping our electoral process, completely unfounded claims that I have yet to see one shred of evidence for.
Yes, and it's exactly why it's so necessary, because if the mainstream media, none of these major outlets are reporting honestly on these issues. They're just sort of absorbing it. They're talking about how, well, you know, we know that Russia is hacked into the elections because the CIA says so, you know, full stop. You know, that's all you need to know. Whereas, you know, independent media will look for multiple sources. And the more you look at that that allegation, the more ludicrous it looks. So
it also shows you how that's their biggest threat. That's what the report was saying, that the biggest threat to the establishment is covering real issues and covering them in a truthful way. And that I think is the scariest thing of all, because clearly it shows that they just want a stranglehold out of information because they don't want the masses to wake up to what's really going on in a country where half the population is living paycheck to paycheck in poverty, and they don't want the media to reflect the reality of Americans living in this country. And that is really, really revealing to me.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of an interview with popular independent journalist Abby Martin. Listeners are discouraged from calling the number announced, but are encouraged to support independent media like Global Research, as well as community radio stations like CKUW, which air the Global Research News Hour. Here again is more from our February 17th conversation with Abby Martin.
I wonder if you could just maybe highlight maybe a couple of particular examples of distortion or omission that you're seeing currently, that is the public's business, that is just not getting the attention or the right kind of attention.
Oh, my God. I would say every single thing Trump is doing, everyone's acting like he's a complete aberration from the system. And I think that is missing the biggest framework of all. And us as independent journalists really need to be setting a bigger stage for this and providing a deeper context and analysis about all of these issues that Trump is pushing forward, all these measures. How did this happen? How did we get here? Fascism doesn't come overnight. Trump didn't happen in a vacuum. Islamophobia didn't just fall on our doorsteps. We have been cultivating and fostering this anti-Muslim environment since 9/11. And you see these neocons today who are claiming to be part of the resistance. David Frum, for God's sake, he coined the term axis of evil. And he's out there trying to lead the charge to resist Trump. I mean, we really, as journalists, need to provide that framework for people, because I think that, you know, of course, when Obama was in office for 8 years, his hypnotic presence and kind of exporting, you know, everything, and, you know, he minimized the military, but then expanded the drone war and special ops. So I think the masses were asleep. Now they're awake again, or a lot of leftists and progressives are. But we need to understand that Obama is the problem, right? These neoliberal politicians are the problem. They got us Trump. corporate warmongers are not going to be the people we need to align with in order to defeat whatever is going to happen. It seems like we are on an accelerated path to a full-blown police state, but it's important to say that, hey, he didn't just create this overnight. Obama has perpetuated the system. That's what happens when you don't prosecute war criminals. That's what happens when you don't end the war. That's what happens when you continue bombing seven predominantly Muslim countries. So I think that all of these issues, whether it be deportations, right? Everyone's talking about deportations now. Well, Obama deported more immigrants than anyone, any president combined. So yes, of course, Trump has an unprecedented contempt for the press. But you look back, you know, whistleblowers have been prosecuted more than ever under the Obama administration, too. So I think that if you're looking at how are things being distorted today and the biggest omissions of the media, I think it's the context of how Trump got in and why he's being able to do all these things. How fragile are our institutions that they're basically at the edge where someone can come in, take complete executive power and unravel the country within a few days? I mean, so that I think is the biggest thing. I mean, I think the second biggest thing is the Russia thing. I've never seen a more hysterical, unfounded kind of neuroses. I haven't been alive for that long, but good God. I mean, I talked to people who were alive during the Cold War, and they say this is just as bad, if not worse, because there's so many potentialities for things to go awry. Syria, Ukraine, all these proxy wars that we have going on with Russia right now. We can go from a Cold War to a hot war very, very quickly, and it is completely ridiculous what the establishment is doing to hype up these tensions with Russia. And, you know, that was the one positive thing I thought Trump would come in and do, was decrease this escalation with Russia, lift the sanctions. And instead, he's done the opposite. I think he's just cowtailing to the establishment.
Yes.
And, you know, the deep state trying to set this narrative.
And with the resignation of General Flynn, now I just saw a tweet from him saying that Russia should deliver or should give back Crimea. So
that's,
I mean,
insane.
that's all ridiculous. Quite, you know, it does seem as if maybe Trump himself has been trumped by the deep state, as he put it. So I guess, you know, we're just sort of winding down a little bit, and it's a fascinating conversation. But again, you listeners, we've got to fight that power of propaganda, and we've got to make sure that we get the truth, that the truth continues to creep out there, you know, like these you little healthy plants through the cracks of this concrete edifice of the of major power interest. Abby, I wanted to ask you, this, we're seeing independent journalists under attack. I mean, you personally are you know, facing that kind of criticism of being a Russian agent or whatever. How concerned should we be about individual newsmakers who are challenging this necessary propaganda campaign that enables war and continued theft and desecration of the planet?
Well, it's going to be a tough road, Michael, because before I found that there was a lot more bridge to build between alternative media outlets back, you know, in 2008 when Ron Paul was winning, and him and Dennis Kucinich really united on a bunch of different fronts to preserve civil liberties and really de-escalate the empire. Unfortunately, today you've seen InfoWars and these Breitbart outlets go completely off the rails and ride the Pamela Geller gravy train of Fear, Inc., and so they have totally, you know, they're in the ear of the president and have kind of packaged themselves as real media, as the truth tellers. So we've been kind of left in the dust. You know, we have the mainstream media, of course, still the same old culprit, really with their stranglehold over basically almost all outlets. Like I said before, the 90% of everything that we see here and read. So there's, you know, these leftists and more kind of independent outlets that are still trying to catch up and set the stage and really take back these narratives that have been completely hijacked. And you see people like Steve Bannon and Donald Trump, like I said before, I mean, they have an unprecedented contempt, not only for the press, not only for the mainstream establishment, but for leftists and for progressives.
Exactly.
Steve Bannon is a person that wants a civil war, a bloody civil war in the streets against the left. And so when you're looking at, you know, I never felt personally threatened by Bush or Obama. I felt like maybe they never even knew who I was or saw my work. With Trump and Bannon, it's a completely different game and a different world where they actually do find me and my ilk as the enemy. And it is a scary time where they have a lot of dirty tricks up their sleeve, Michael, and it's no longer about taking down the Democratic establishment. It's about completely taking down any sort of progressive voice in this country.
Yeah, you've made an interesting point. It's like they filled that void that had been vacated. So you have a situation where Trump is the spokesperson for opposing NAFTA and opposing TPP. There are excellent reasons for opposing those that legislation, and it was abandoned by the so-called progressives, and these neocons kind of jumped in there. And so you've got, I guess you could call it, manufacture of dissent, where you're sculpting these movements. It's like you have. I'm sure you're as annoyed as I am about the way the anti-war movement. Whenever there's a Republican in the White House, it's very robust, and then it goes to sleep when the Democrats are in power.
Exactly. And Trump has somehow manipulated everyone and tapped into these pockets, like you're talking about, the trade stuff, which I totally agree with him, not for the right reasons. He's not going to renegotiate these deals on behalf of the people. He's just going to probably make them better for his business partners. But yeah, I mean, he really knew how to tap into the working class who felt completely abandoned by neoliberal policies for the last 30 years, and also the anti-war sentiment. We're confusing anti-war ideology with kind of this nationalistic isolationism, which, is more just him saying America first, let's spend our money first. But he's not saying pull back the bases. Instead, he's repeating the same mantra that the neocons did in their document, rebuilding America's defenses. They said that they wanted to rebuild America's defenses and rebuild the military, but they needed that event, right? They needed that 9/11 event. Well, Trump's one of his first executive orders in office, barely a week after he got in, was rebuilding America's defenses. He signed an executive order to do a massive expansion on all conventional nuclear and cyber warfare weapons, technological capabilities. And so what does that mean? It means that he's not anti-war. He's not going to stop the empire or curtail it in any way. He just did a huge glowing speech at Boeing talking about how they're going to buy all these F-35 jets and make the biggest military in the world. You know, we already have a military that's bigger than the next 10 countries combined. But Trump, echoing that sentiment of the neocon establishment during the Bush administration, is going right along that path, Michael, and not looking back.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just about at the end of this discussion, but I've really enjoyed. I think we're going to have you back on when both of our schedules will allow that. I don't know if there's maybe an upcoming show that you'd like to plug, or if you're just going to be continuing on the as you continue doing Telesur's the Empire Files, which is a sustained criticism essentially of U.S. empire and the media that's continues to enable that agenda.
Absolutely. It's a documentary series that's out every week telling, the victors write history. And so I'm trying to retell history and the impacts of the U.S. empire and its minions and patsies around the world have done to affect the entire planet, usurp the democracies of countless countries, affected the populations of so many different nations that should have had their own democratic evolutions, and unfortunately they haven't. And so this series is trying to retell those chapters, those lost chapters, from the eyes of the marginalized and oppressed who have been forgotten about, Michael. And you can check it out on Empire Files on YouTube or Telesur English. I also do a podcast with my brother called Media Roots Radio, and you can find that on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Abby Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Michael, for having me.
You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can listen to our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across Canada and the United States. We are now also broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I'm series host, creator, and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.